Hello, 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 everybody. I am Pedro.
And I'm Meredith.
And she's very distressed this week. And this is Gritty Reboot, the grittiest damn show about reboots there has ever been.
Yeah.
So this week we...
So gritty.
Yes, the grittiest thing. And of course this week we are not doing a reboot, right?
No.
We're doing the exact opposite of a reboot. We're taking a look at twin movies, but this time it's not twins. We got triplets. Technically, it's five kids, but we're only covering three,
yeah,
so it's just triplets.
Let's not get crazy.
Yeah, we're not talking about the other movies because they're not very good, and I've only seen one of them once, and it was just I barely remember it. So yeah. Anyway, this week we are covering Leviathan as we deal with the aquatic horror films of 1989. This movie, Deep Star 6 by Sean Cunningham, and of course, I think his name is James Cameron. Did he do anything himself? He made a movie called The Abyss.
Yeah, he's the king of these movies.
Oh, he's the king of these movies.
That's what a lot of reviews that I read.
Yeah,
I read some bad reviews. I mostly read 10-star reviews because that's what I wanted to have for today.
That's all you wanted to have.
Yeah, because this movie sucks, and it deserves a good 10-star review.
So, I found one. This is a movie that's a little different for me because I have a lot of nostalgia for it. And I thought this was a bit of an underrated gem. And then we went and watched it this time. And that's not the film that I found. I found a film that was, I don't want to say painful to watch, but it wasn't what I remembered at all. And so nostalgia didn't help this thing at all. I thought this film was slow.
Yeah.
I thought it might have been the least original film I've ever seen because almost every plot element is taken from another film. And even then, the story is paper thin in this thing. This movie is only held together by, I think, some solid performances.
Good acting.
Some solid performances. And, well, let's just get it out there right now before we even talk about the facts. I think one of the things that holds this movie down is this is Stan Winston's whiff.
Yeah.
This creature is not great, and the movie is edited around the creature, clearly, right? Like, there are so many times, like, there's an attack, and we barely see the monster.
Actually, Stan Winston shot those scenes.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the way they're cut is what I have an issue with.
Because Cosmatos was like, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm not gonna film those. Those are yours. You're
yeah, creation. I know he let him be the second unit director at some point, so that just made things go a little bit easier. And the fact is the creature work isn't very good, especially in the end sequence where you see him in clear as day.
I got some trivia about this.
Yeah, he's not moving very well. And I think that's one of the things that holds the movie down. I really liked this film and thought we were walking into a solid 6, maybe even a 7. But this was definitely more of a 4.
I'd give it a 5.
You give it a 5?
Yeah, I'm about even Steven on it.
I
think
this was definitely more of a 4. I thought this was really underwhelming, especially because I thought the creature effects would be really, really good because of Stan Winston. And some of them are quite good, but I think the main dish just isn't there. And some of the way it's shot, I think, isn't very good either. So.
Yeah.
But we'll get into it when we get there. But I just wanted to get like our rating right off the board because I know this. So every now and then I forget. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk about right off the show. Get our numerical score for the film that we didn't care for and we don't recommend.
5 sea urchins.
5 sea urchins out of 100.
Yeah.
No, it just
out of 10.
Out of 10. No, it just wasn't the kind of movie that I thought it was going to be when I went back to it. I was really, I guess I was surprised by how shallow this film was at the end of the
day. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I hear you.
Do you have trivia you want to talk about?
I sure do, Pedro.
All right, well, lay it on me.
All right.
You're excited. I like it. We're all excited about Leviathan.
The movie is set in the year 2027.
2027. We're only a few years away.
Had no fucking clue because it's not really obvious because everything looks old as shit to me.
Well, they're doing video calls.
Yeah.
They didn't have those in 1989.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. But like still everything was very...
The ship was a little futuristic, but the problem is it's futuristic in 1989.
That's what I'm saying.
It still looks old for...
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Because it wasn't trying to do like Star Wars, like way in the future, some distant place. It was just trying to do like, you know, 50 years, 40 years in the future. What would that look like?
Yeah.
And because that's just what it was aiming for, you know, it just looks a little weird. You know, and the ship's kind of lived in a little bit, so that makes it look a little worn down as well.
Once during the underwater photography, John Rosengrant and other members of the SWS on set crew were underwater for so long and at such a depth that they were unaware of a violent storm that had come in, threatening to rip the topside boat from its anchor and smash it against the nearby rocks. Quote, "We had no idea all of this was going on until we came to the surface and saw all the commotion," recalled Rosengrant. "We all got out of the water and helped push the boat away from the rocks and hold it steady for in the storm."
Yeah, you know, shooting on water is no joke.
No.
You know, that's why you see movies.
They didn't shoot a lot of this
movie. Really didn't. They did, and we'll talk about it when we get to really the opening scene. But, you know, and that's why you know, you don't do that. You do other things to try to get around shooting on water because it just takes so much time and you can have a disaster like that. You can have a storm blow in and ruin your entire day or week.
Yeah.
You know, if you lose something like that or somebody gets hurt, God forbid. You know, it really does change. That's why Waterworld was so expensive, because the whole fucking movie's on water.
Yeah, I fucking hate that movie.
I was just watching Ebert's Worst of the Year, and I think that made the list for like 95, yeah. 94.
It's the worst of my life.
I don't hate Waterworld. People have rediscovered Waterworld. Ugh. That was one of the films that I was going to use, but, you know, I mean, I don't think Waterworld's very good. I think it's okay
at terrible.
Best. I think it's okay at best. And that's really all I can say. It's okay.
In designing the creature, Stan Winston and George P. Cosmatos went through a mini library of marine life pictures and medical reference books. They were inspired by physiology from the natural world and came up with the idea of combining human body parts and elements of deep sea marine life into an unnatural creature never seen on film before.
Yeah, and it all comes together to look like what Ernie Hudson called a giant chicken.
Yeah.
Listen, that's probably the best way to put it. What's the old saying? A horse by committee is a camel.
Yeah.
And that's a lot what this creature is. Like, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen about what should be on this creature. And it's kind of a mess of like 10 different ideas.
Well, it sounds like, I don't know. It sounds like Stan Winston and George Cosmatos were on the same page and maybe everybody else was on a different page.
Here's the thing. I think Cosmatos liked every idea that Winston had. So they're like, we'll throw it all in there. And when it comes out the other side of the blender, I just don't think the slurry was very tasty. It just doesn't feel like a Stan Winston product. It feels like something lesser.
Yeah.
It really does. Just the first time, like, you see him out in the sunlight, like, that's not really scary at all. Like, when the thing pops up, you know, which this movie obviously has a lot of similarities to.
There are very few scenes in the film that were actually shot underwater, as production went from the dry for wet look.
Dry for wet.
With most of the scenes inside the shack taking place on sound stages in a tank measuring 130 feet by 270 feet. Scenes that could not be filmed dry for wet at the sound stage in Cinecittà. Yeah.
It's Italian.
Sin City.
I can't see. It's in your notes, so I can't see the word. But I did hear this. I heard.
Sin City.
Yeah, I heard Ernie Hudson say this on the.
Yeah, it's a production house.
Yeah, it's a famous studio out there.
We're shot either in big water tanks or at sea in Malta. Dan Winston had his main creature. Ugh.
You want to try that again? You all right?
Stan Winston and his main creature effects team trained and certified as scuba divers prior to filming in order to support the required water scenes in the movie to ensure their safety and proficiency in the water. Quote, Tom Woodruff Jr. would be in the suit underwater and the rest of us would act as safety divers so we could get Tom out of the suit quickly if something happened. Noted John Rosengrant.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, when you're working underwater, you have to work very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, all it takes is one mistake and somebody drowns, so.
Yeah, fucking crazy.
It is. It really is.
In addition to the amazing creature effect, Stan Winston's studio also built the deep dive suits designed by conceptual artist Steven Berg. The studio made a dive suit for each of the lead actors, Peter Weller, Amanda Pays, Ernie Hudson, and Daniel Stern. Quote, we were commissioned to build the old-style mechanical underwater dive suits that the crew wears to explore the sunken ship, says Mahan. We made one custom suit that could be retrofit to every actor. The suits were white fiberglass shells with joints. They weren't as light as the actors would have liked, but they were as light as we could make them, considering how big and bulky they were. They had bellows at the bottom of the feet, so when a character stepped down, they would squirt air to make dust on the ground.
Yeah, I saw this effect. When we're watching the 4K transfer this, you can see the dust or the dirt kicking out every time they step. It's a great, clever little idea.
Shot at 48 frames per second, it looked like it was in slow motion and underwater.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, that's basically the key to the dry for wet technique. You shoot things a little bit at a higher frame rate and play back slower. So everything looks like it's heavier, more labored, like they're in water. And then the key is the sediment in the air.
Yeah.
Or pardon me, in the water. You know, things are just floating there.
I was just about to go through it.
Before you knock down your water and get it everywhere. why don't you tell us about what they did? Because I do know, I saw this in one of the behind the scenes things. It's actually a very cool idea.
Chicken feathers were used at one point of the shooting.
Which is what I would have thought too.
The underwater scenes. And suggest things were floating around in the water. According to Alex Thompson, this did not work because the features were floating side to side instead of up and down. The idea was scrapped altogether. But what did they do instead? You ask.
What could they possibly have done? So this does seem like a good idea, but yeah, if it's just going down, it doesn't feel like water at all. So they used a wax.
Yeah.
They used a wax, which I was like, I don't even know how that works. But apparently heated up, it gave them the smoke and little atmosphere for the water and created perfect little particles that just kind of flowed and fluttered through the air. And it worked perfectly for them, and that's what they used. I forget the name of the style of wax or whatever. But that's basically just what it was, just a little wax, kind of like an oil they were burning. And it worked out real well. Now, I think I will say, before we get into it, in 4K, the dry for wet technique is not as convincing.
Yeah.
I will say that. Like, was we're watching that, the first thing I thought of is, that's clearly not underwater. I hadn't done any research on this movie. I hadn't probably seen this movie in 15 years, if not longer. Probably longer. I think probably the last time I sat down to watch this movie would have been with my dad, probably on the Sci-Fi Channel or something like that. So, and he does like this movie, which is why I would have seen it and I have fond memories of it. But I think my dad also might like Peter Weller as well. I like Peter Weller.
Yeah, I don't have any memories of this movie. The first time I watched it was the other night.
Oh really? You've never actually seen it? Yeah, no, my dad had wanted to watch it and he really liked it. So we'd seen it a few times on cable. And, you know, because it did not do very well at the box office. I think this was like a $30 million film, and I think it only made like $15. So this was a huge flop. And that's one of the things about it. But before we get into the movie, we need to talk about the director, Cosmatos.
Okay.
So now, we've dealt with him before, have we not?
Yeah.
Yeah, he directed Tombstone. But yeah. He didn't really direct Tombstone. He just sort of came in for the other director who was fired while the cast and crew sort of directed the movie, I guess, themselves, and Cosmatos just took credit for it.
Yeah.
The Directors Guild is sort of how it's been reported. I wanted to talk about it because he's the director here, and he sort of famously or infamously did not get along with really anybody on set. He had screaming matches with Stan Winston on set, and then that was sort of the compromise, the second unit director bit, because apparently Cosmatos was shooting things in a way that Stan Winston thought wasn't beneficial for the effects. And maybe that's one of the things they had to cut around in some of those shots. Because I think, like I said, some of those scenes are poorly edited. Daniel Stern almost came to blows with him. They had to be separated. Ernie Hudson got in a shouting match with him as well. Ernie Hudson, I think, called him the most politically incorrect man in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
I wonder what he said.
Yeah, and Cosmatos. And by the way, Cosmatos, before this, he had directed a couple of Stallone movies. He directed Rambo 2.
First Blood.
And he had directed Cobra. But the legend on Cobra is that he also shadow directed, that Stallone really directed the film. And Cosmatos just took credit for it, showed up every day and collected a paycheck, and that was it. So, and listen, I don't know much more about that. I just only Googled that a little bit, but apparently it's something people say about that, but it just deserves to be mentioned.
So he's a lazy director. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well, you know, his credits aren't very good, and this movie isn't very good, but he does have a classic under his belt, but it does appear he had nothing to do with it. And that classic, of course, is Cobra. No, the classic is Tombstone. But I just wanted to mention that. And also, because I have this clip. And this is Michael Rosenbaum's podcast. And he's talking to Michael Biehn. Now, they're talking about Tombstone. I didn't play this for Tombstone, but I wanted to play it here because it really sets up the kind of gentleman that Cosmatos is, or at least that Michael Biehn says he is.
Talking about Michael
Rooker, your old buddy from Tombstone.
Michael Rooker was also in Tombstone.
Because I want you to tell a Rooker story. Because on the podcast, you were listening to it.
Yes.
Rooker says, no, I don't get angry. If I get angry, I get angry. Like, you know, I'm acting angry. And then you started laughing because you were listening to that. And you said, that's bullshit. Ask him about, come on.
Well, I don't know about other times, but I know.
Well, he's an intense guy. He's funny, intense. You know,
dude. When he was on Tombstone, and when he blew up George Cosmatos, and he got in George Cosmatos' face, I don't think that was for effect.
What happened?
George Cosmatos was an idiot. George Cosmatos replaced another director, Kevin Jarre, on that movie.
Kevin Jarre.
And George Cosmatos,
don't know him.
Just was
he almost directed Tombstone?
Brought in, nobody really liked him. This is the truth. I met him. I said five words to him the entire time I made that movie, and he was the director on. He got credited for directing that movie. I met him. I said hello, and he started talking. It was, you know, around a couple of other people. I just said hello. And then the next day, I watched him directing the way he treated people. The next time he approached me, he said, Michael. And I said, go fuck yourself. And that was the only five words I ever said to George Cosmatos. Go fuck yourself.
Based on just what you're...
But my observations of the way that he treated people on that set... You know, he would say things like, tell the extra with the big tits to take two steps forward.
Sounds like a delight.
And he was a guy that if you were above him on the food chain, he'd kiss your ass. So he
brown noser.
Kiss my ass.
Probably why I got
if you were
along
below
with Stallone.
Him on the food chain, he'd treat like shit.
What and about thought, a guy like Val Kilmer? He treated him with respect.
Of course, Val,
kissed his
Kurt,
ass.
Sam Elliott. Billy Bob, no, all those people.
Did they like him?
Nobody liked him.
Nobody liked him.
Well, he didn't really direct the movie. Nobody directed it.
It wasn't even made.
Yeah.
Fades away. No, I just wanted to play that because Cosmatos is, well, I don't think the film's very well directed, and I don't think Cosmatos is a very good director, and I'm using Michael Biehn to help me lay a case that he, not only is he a shit director, but
he's
also
person.
Terrible to work with as well.
Yeah.
Like he... was infamous for saying he had a vision. He made actors do take after take after take after take and just grind them down. And this was a physical shoot. There's effects work. Those suits you talked about, they cost $30,000 a piece. And I mean, they weighed a ton and actors passed out in them from heat. I mean, this was a difficult shoot and Cosmatos made it more difficult by pushing them harder to do take after take because he had a vision. And from what he put on screen, his vision was shit.
Yeah.
So,
very generic.
Yeah, he did not really need to push actors like that for this, for fucking Leviathan. And I was so shocked when I looked in the film and saw that it has a pretty passionate fan base. The people have come around to saying this is a cult classic or an underrated gem. And I couldn't disagree more. I really did not care for this film, really in the least. So, and knowing what I learned about Cosmatos only made me like the film even less.
Yeah, it's a very generic movie as far as. Like lighting and fucking everything else.
I think the lighting and like the set design and stuff is really good. The acting's solid, but you know, the screenplay is, I mean, half baked at best. I mean, the story's just not really there, right?
The creature effects for me really bring it down.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. I was expecting like a really cool, underrated 80s monster, and I was like, oh, that's why nobody talks about the movie. The creatures look stupid.
Yeah.
But with that being said, we bashed the movie enough. We've talked around it. We've talked about a few things. I think it's time to actually get into it, huh?
Before we do that. Before we do that, if you want to tell us anything about this movie, do you like it? Maybe you don't. Maybe you do.
Maybe you don't.
Tell us.
Let us know.
Let us know at grittyrebootcast@gmail.com or on our socials, which I don't know.
Which is, you go to TikTok, Instagram or YouTube and search Gritty Reboot and you'll find us right there and you can click that, follow along, and you can see we put clips from the show, random thoughts that we have. I occasionally make memes. The TikTok is the only thing I make. The TikTok likes are memes. Any podcast clips, it hates those. Anything like that, it only likes my memes, and I don't know why.
Maybe.
Listen, it is what it is.
Meme-orific.
Meme-orific. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm not turning that into a clip.
No.
Much right there. Meme-orific.
It was an experiment that tampered with
motherfucking came out laws. In 1989.
It was buried 5 miles down. Now, a crew of undersea miners is about to stumble upon this terrifying secret.
Shack to Seven, what's going on out there, Williams?
My God, are you picking this up?
Look at that. Leviathan.
Currently with a Russian fleet in the Baltic Sea.
Currently, it's rusted junk, and we're looking at it. What's your air reading?
20 minutes.
Do something quick!
But Boston, my crew's in jeopardy.
But you have no proof.
I'm ordering you to start an emergency medical evacuation.
What if it turns out to be nothing?
Help me!
It's already killed one man.
Way to stop. I'm losing compression.
We start underwater.
Whatever got sick.
With a giant circle.
I feel something.
And I guess it's supposed to be a bubble?
It's a bubble.
It's a big bubble.
It's a big bubble.
You hear whale noises.
There's a lot of whale noises in the sound.
Yeah.
And just in the general mise en scène of the film.
And it's like they didn't even loop the best part of a whale noise. They just kind of hit the part of it. So it sounds really weird.
What's the best part of a whale noise?
Well, you have to. It's a long process. The whale sound.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
I never thought about it.
Yeah.
I just thought of a whale noise, and now I'm thinking it's a long process.
It is.
I don't know why it is.
Yeah, because like, you know, we're talking at a normal level. Well, whale is like,
can you please explain to our audience one more time how whales do this? That's how they go brrr.
Yeah. Okay. Instead of saying hello, they say, oh.
I didn't mean for you to really continue, but you went for it. You really went for
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for this.
I'm here for whale noises.
It's made the show stronger and it's made us stronger.
So we're back. We're underwater. We have a giant circle. We keep going deeper and deeper as the credits roll.
Yeah, we have a lot of shots of the ocean here as we move further down.
As we go deeper into the ocean, we end up at the Tri-Oceanic Mining Community. And it's at this point that we kind of notice it's pretty evident that they're not working in real water here.
Yeah, and that's sort of the one thing from the 4K transfer I don't think really helps the movie. Like, it was very apparent. As I said, I really hadn't seen it since I was a kid. So I hadn't done research on it or anything like that. I came in cold to the movie. So it was the first thing that I saw. I was like, oh, this is obviously dry for wet. And that's okay, but all of it's dry for wet. But that's how you make a movie like this for $30 million. It looks that way. It's not bad or anything like that. It's not like it's piss poor or laughable. I'm pretty sure in the theater it looked pretty solid. I'm pretty sure on VHS and on TV it was really not noticeable. But, you know, like I said, in 4K HDR, you can tell.
That it's pretty obvious.
That they're shooting dry for wet. It is what it is.
The team is out there in suits. One of them starts freaking out.
He does. He really starts hyperventilating right in his suit.
De Jesus.
De Jesus.
Yes.
De Jesus.
De Jesus.
De Jesus.
I'm saying it right, right?
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
De Jesus.
De Jesus.
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay, good. He says he can't breathe. He's afraid to die. But Steven saves the day.
That's Michael Carmine, by the way, plays De Jesus. He'd pass away about a year after the movie was done shooting.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, passed away, sadly. I think he had a heart attack at like 30 years old.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. This is one of his final films. And he's quite good here.
That's really sad. Yeah, I didn't have that fact.
I heard Ernie Hudson talk about it. Yeah. Ernie Hudson is a great interview, by the way.
Ernie Hudson, speaking of, is a part of the cast, and he plays Justin Jones.
I think the film also introduces the concept that there is 100 days they have to be on their tour, and they're on day 97.
Yeah, they're like ready to ship out of it.
They're almost done with it. They've just about to hit their quota.
We have Daniel Stern as well, and he plays Six Pack.
He does play Six Pack. Obviously, everybody knows Daniel Stern from Home Alone.
Yeah, that's the only thing I know him from. I don't think I've seen anything else with him in
it. You haven't seen anything? He did the voice on the Wonder Years.
Huh.
Yeah, he did the voice on the Wonder Years. He was in a film called Bushwhacked that I really liked as a kid.
Totally in my blind spot.
He was in Home Alone 2?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else I would have seen him in. I know this other thing. Oh, he was in, I think he directed Rookie of the Year, a movie about a kid who breaks his arm, and when it heals, he can throw a baseball like 110 miles an hour.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think he directed that. It was stupid.
Sounds stupid.
I kind of liked it.
I know it brought baseball.
It brought people joy, so I know you wouldn't like it.
You like baseball movies, even though you don't really like baseball that much.
I do like baseball. I just don't watch it because I'm not a Rangers fan. And I can't watch my Astros in this territory.
Whatever.
I can't. It sucks. I hate it. I wish I could. It'd be great if I could.
We have a real weird rough cut to Peter Weller in the mirror shaving.
We're just watching the outside, and then he immediately starts talking into the video call.
Yeah, they talk about the doc and the quota they have to meet.
Now, he talks to Meg Foster here with her witch eyes.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Meg Foster. She will also be the love interest to Roddy Piper in They Live in a few years.
Yeah.
We won't ever cover that, but we should. It's a great movie.
Well, you know what? It's our podcast, and by God, we can do whatever we want.
Yeah, one day we'll just do it. We'll do a month. We'll just cover all the other films of John Carpenter that we're not going to get to do.
Yeah, because we love John Carpenter. Well, I love John Carpenter.
We both love John Carpenter.
Yeah.
He really is one of my favorites, so.
He's done so many good things.
He has.
All right, so they talk, they hang up. Steven reprimands the doc.
Yeah, all they do is really give us information on what we know. It's like their quota's hit already. They're just basically burning daylight until...
Yeah, they're basically like, I think 12 hours, she says, she can be out there.
Yeah, yeah. And when DeJesus started hyperventilating, Peter Weller had to help with the situation because the doctor wasn't at his post.
Yeah, and so he's pissed off. So he reprimands the doc. But
the doc, by the way, is played by Richard Crenna. Most people would recognize him from Rambo 2.
Yeah.
And well, the first. Well, they would recognize him from the Rambo films.
The doctor examines DeJesus. And then we have... What they're doing is they're trying to get us a little bit about everybody's character and, you know, show you a little bit about each.
Yeah, role. This is the point of a movie like this where we get to meet the crew while they're having dinner or breakfast or whatever.
Yeah.
It is, and we see all their quirky personalities.
Yeah.
We've seen this scene a lot. And there's not a lot that really sets this one apart.
We have Six-Pack sexually harassing Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
Steven talks to a woman about the doctor and getting the hell out of that mine. And they just want to go home so bad. They've been there forever.
Yeah, they really want to get
out. It's under the ocean. I can understand. I wouldn't want.
Well, just like any gig like that where you're just out of the sun.
You're not going to find me in places of danger.
Yeah.
I'm just not built for danger.
You're not built for danger?
No.
I'll get you a shirt that says that. I'm not built for danger.
Yeah. Like if somebody ever comes at me.
I am the danger.
Somebody ever comes at me with a knife or whatever, I'm going to fight like hell.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But.
You don't want to ever be in the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't ever want to be there. Okay. I understand you.
Yeah.
I understand you.
I'm not going to ever be underwater millions of miles and underwater.
Millions of miles.
Wow. Straight to the core of the earth.
That's the deep part of the ocean. Yeah,
that's where I'm going.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure there.
Mariana Trench, go eat your heart out.
Go eat your heart out.
Elizabeth puts a creature in Park's bed.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because he had a little crab that he had pop out and scare her from his suit.
Yeah.
And so she repaid the favor to Six-Pack.
He gets pissed and gets, like, all in her face.
He does. He gets real upset. And
Peter Weller has to break him up, right? Yeah. He has to
give him extra duty or whatever. Or half a shift, I think. And, oh, by the way, forgot to mention Hector Elizondo in the movie. This is a rare non-Gary Marshall appearance for Hector Elizondo.
Yeah.
Character actor.
There you go.
Nicest man who ever lived, Hector Elizondo.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
He once gave a kidney to a total stranger.
That is bullshit.
He did, yeah. He donated his kidney. He had no idea who he gave it to. Jeez.
Whatever.
Yeah, stranger. Hello. You don't get to meet him beforehand. What do you think you get to select?
Well, I'm sure you can meet.
You can meet? Yeah. Like, would you like to, your kidney's coming from character actor, Charles Elizondo. Would you like to meet him? Who? The seventh lead in The Princess Bride. Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
He's an actor. He's been in things. He's
been in things. Name a Hector Elizondo film.
I have no clue. Like.
Name your favorite Hector Elizondo performance.
I have no idea. Bad Boys.
Bad Boys. Yes, he's a very bad boy. Thank you. So, you know, nothing about anybody in this cast except that Peter Weller was in RoboCop.
Yeah, exactly.
And Ernie Hudson was a Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
He was the bad guy in The Substitute as well. I loved him in Concord.
I know Ernie Hudson.
Yeah. No, Ernie Hudson's been in a bunch of shit.
Yeah, he's been in tons of shit. And Peter Weller to a lesser extent, but still.
Peter Weller is such a cool actor.
Yeah.
And that really helps this movie.
Well, Six-Pack is out of the water and falls while working. They start to look for him. So he's on a cliff of some sort, and he falls into a crevasse.
A crevasse.
And he goes missing. Yes, and so they go and try to find
him. Yeah, it begins like a mad dash of trying to look for him so they can make sure that they can actually fucking find the guy. So there's a little bit of danger here, but this movie early on is glacially paced.
Oh, my God. And you know what? It doesn't have very much to it because a lot of the movies that we review take up at least four full pages for me of writing.
Yeah.
This movie only took up like 2.5, really.
Like, well, yeah. Like, I remember I thought this movie was like 2 hours and 15, 20 minutes, and it was just under two. Like, that's how long the movie feels. It really does feel like quite an eternity. This first act really is just like in first gear, just barely moving.
Yeah. Elizabeth sees something in the ocean while it's being broadcast to the crew. They find a Russian sub called the Leviathan.
Yeah. So this is what their search leads them to, the Leviathan. And this is all the Leviathan is.
Yeah.
There is no giant sea creature in this movie. If you came to this movie because it's called Leviathan, assuming there'd be Peter Weller versus some sort of giant sea serpent, you sadly have picked the wrong film. That will not be in this film.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to make that known that this is a movie called Leviathan, and there's not a Leviathan here.
No. No.
No. No!
It's something else, but it's not a Leviathan.
It's not a Leviathan.
I was disappointed in that.
Yeah.
Elizabeth continues to search inside the ship. She finds him as he's got a safe of some sort in his hands while she finds him. So they all go back to the ship. Or no, I guess it's like a mining facility.
Yeah, they go back to their home base.
And they start going through the safe. And this is where I note that so far, not a lot has happened in this movie.
Yeah, this is all we do. We get some setup on. We know that the captain of the other ship has left a VHS log.
Yeah.
And we know the other thing that we really see here that Cosmato shows us is that Six-Pack steals a flask.
Yeah.
And pockets it for himself. And dooms almost all of mankind.
Yeah, no, right?
Just because he's a drunk.
Just wants some booze.
He's a shitty employee.
Yeah.
And he almost kills everybody.
Yeah.
So there we go. He deserved all this.
Doc tells Steven about the video he found. He says the Leviathan was struck by a torpedo, but Steven kind of blows him off. He's got bigger, better things.
Yeah, the movie doesn't really care about what happened over the Leviathan.
Yeah.
Like, despite the fact that the movie is named after this ship.
Which is a mystery. I mean, it should be explored.
Yeah, whatever happened. Like, I assumed at some point they were going to go back there to try to find out what's going on with, like, Daniel Stern.
Yeah.
And then he just dies. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess we don't care, huh? Yeah, we just don't care. Okay, whatever. I just assumed that was going to be part of the plot. It's not that I didn't remember that. I just kind of assumed it.
The crew are having a moment together, and they decide to break into Steven's safe to get the bottle of booze he got from the ship.
But he has outsmarted them.
They take a shot, and it's water.
Yeah, I love that. It's great. One of the few moments made me smirk. It's a nice character background moment, but I need something else to happen.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was thinking this right now. So I need something else of note or substance to really occur, other than they're having, you know, crappy video calls with their boss. Yeah. Yeah, I needed a little bit more at this point in the movie. So while that's a cute scene, like, I want something to chew on at this point.
Hell yeah. Elizabeth is running around and runs into Steven. And they have a moment, so they have some chemistry.
Yeah, they do. I think
they want to bang.
They're going to push their genitals together.
Yeah.
He's going to grab her boobs like bags of sand. Is that not a thing?
Anywho, Doc checks Six-Pack and he takes off his shirt and he's got spots on his back, like little gray spots.
Yeah. I don't know if you mentioned it, but there was the scene the night before where he shared his booze with Bowman.
Bridget.
Bowman. Now, I understand if you look up the character names on this movie, everybody has a full name, but people are only called certain things, right? She is never, ever called Bridget. She's called Bowman.
Well, listen, I wrote down their first names, and that's what I stuck with.
And that's fine. I'm not saying you're wrong.
So she is Bridget.
I'm just saying, like, they call her Bowman throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
When he's admiring her boobs, he was like, what, nice pair or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we, well, yeah, I would have to get to that part because he's dying already. We already missed that. And she liked him oogling her boobs, I guess, right? She didn't seem put off by that.
I don't know. For some reason. I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know.
I know you were so quiet. Like, I don't know.
Six Pack is in real bad shape. The doctor takes a sample from his neck and it comes back with organism of unknown origin. And then he quickly dies, but he's not really dead yet.
His consciousness as a human dies.
Yeah.
And whatever's inside him begins to mutate. But we don't know that until after this, he inspects the entire crew, right?
Yeah, De Jesus and crew come back from their mission. Doc talks to Steven about Six Pack.
They don't tell anybody that Six Pack has died. Mm-hmm. It's only between Peter Weller and the Doc.
And Steven can't believe it.
Yeah, and basically they inspect everybody in the crew. They look at everybody's backs. And Bowman has experienced symptoms. And conveniently, the Doc gets called out to have to take another video call.
Yeah, and while he's going to take a video call,
she gets very sick.
Bridget comes like right past him and looks really sick.
You mean Bowman?
Whatever.
Yeah.
Doc and Steven talk to the powers that be.
Fight the power.
Hello, power. Thank you for lighting my way.
I want your version of the movie. Hello, power.
They talk to the powers that be, and they're hurricanes, so they can't come to get them.
Yeah, their pickup is delayed by at least 12 hours because of the incoming hurricane.
Bridget, meanwhile, or Bowman, whatever, calls and gets more ill.
Yeah, she's in shit shape. She's just puking in the sink, and her hair is falling out. And she walks to go to find Six Pack. I want to call him 69, but that's not right. She goes looking for a Six Pack. And when she finds him, like, he's dead. And she sees it immediately with, like, her hair, like, in her hands that fell out of her head. And his arm is beginning to mutate into something.
Yeah.
We don't know what this something is, right?
Mm-mm.
But he is mutating. And this sight causes her to go and kill herself, right?
Yeah, she doesn't want whatever he's got.
Just from this one sight, she's just like, she doesn't want to make sure she doesn't have, like, you know, psoriasis or something.
Justin goes to check on Six Pack and he's alive. What?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's real confusing.
Well, I like that because he's twitching and mutating underneath there and he thinks like his foot or his leg is moving while he's asleep.
Justin finds a doc.
It's not really played for laughs. It's just a thing.
Justin finds a doc. He gets sidetracked by the showers running. They find Bridget and she's killed herself.
Yeah, Bowman slit her wrist.
The crew chat about what's going on, and suddenly they hear something. Six Pack and Bridget were fusing together, basically.
Yeah, they basically threw the two corpses in the same room together because they've never seen a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
And so the corpse of Six Pack ends up with the corpse of Bowman forming, like, what looks pretty cool, a little bit of body horror here.
They take the bodies to dump it, but it starts moving. They quickly dump it.
This is a fun scene. I like this.
The water.
Yeah, they take this body, and Hector Elizondo and De Jesus are like, no, it's moving. It's, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, there's almost some comedy here, but they don't really go for that. But it is kind of a fun scene as it drops down, and it claws at Hector Elizondo and cuts him as they rapidly rush to throw it into the...
The airlock?
Well, it's not an airlock. They're whatever lowers them into the water, I guess. You know what? We'll call it a waterlock.
A waterlock.
The waterlock.
There we go.
So they put it in the waterlock and launch it.
Okay.
But it doesn't work.
Well, Elizabeth strips and takes a shower.
Yeah. This She's is close to
grossed out by everything.
We get a see-through bra.
Yeah. Steven and the doc talk about the skull and large hand they found in the sub. So there's some weirdness.
They're establishing more of the idea that there are mutants and everything. And this is as much as we get into what happened on the Russian sub. That's the only proof they have that there's something weird going on with human people.
The leg of the creature festers and starts growing. So,
oh yeah. When they try to throw him out the water lock, he's only able to get a leg out the creature.
Yeah.
That begins transforming into like a sea serpent, a mini, or like a big eel, basically, not a serpent, my mistake. Like a big eel.
Steven and a couple of the crew discovered that the Russians tampered with the vodka.
Yeah, they finally find out where everything came from.
And then Justin starts making a fuss. He's like, we need to get the fuck out of here. I don't know what we're doing. Why is everybody dying? I can't handle this shit. He's basically freaking out.
Yeah, but this is what you want to do in this situation. I mean, things went from, we just need to get home and somebody got sick, to now people are dead and there's a monster somewhere around.
And they're freaking underneath the ocean.
Yeah, there's nowhere they can go.
Fucking scary as shit.
It is terrible. I'm scared right now.
Steven talks to girl boss and she's bad or something because she's lingering. There's a lingering shot of her face. I guess because of her.
Yeah.
Her witch eyes.
Her witch eyes. And she's just staring, right? I like the idea of them doing this video call and what they think like video call technology will be like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big CRTs. That's what we're going to have in a couple years, 3 years.
Yeah. I'm kidding.
Yeah. I like that.
A creature comes out and attacks DeJesus, and he's getting eaten by the creature. Justin backs him in and goes for help. He gets the doc and Steven, and they discover DeJesus has escaped.
Yeah, yeah. He goes and he asks Cobb to watch him while he tries to get some extra help. And Cobb's like, fuck that, I gotta get a weapon. So they let DeJesus now is just running loose on the ship. But it's not DeJesus anymore.
No.
He's pretty, well, he doesn't die, sadly.
Mm-mm.
He never dies until the very end.
The crew arms themselves with flamethrowers and axes.
So the weapon design is pretty laughable on this. First of all, why would an undersea mission have a flamethrower? And why would they have two of them?
Yeah.
And also, why would they give them a really weird design that's not a standard flamethrower? Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like a big, like, plastic thing with, like, two, like, three lighters at the very end that light into the flame.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it does. It's a really weird looking design. It's kind of whatever, but I just wanted to point it out that it's just very strange.
BP is looking at some wires and gets out.
I mean, Cobb.
Gets got by the creature. Sure.
Yeah.
The crew talks about their options. They use Steven's blood as bait to try to lure it to so that they can get into the water. The doctor goes to the control room. He evacuates all the AirPods. He doesn't want anyone to leave.
Yeah, well, he knows exactly what it could be. So, I mean, this does make sense. But once again, this is a very cliche scene we've seen in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
This whole concept was done better in The Thing. I mean, well, I could say that about the entire movie. But this is another thing that I think is just, oh, okay.
Like, underestimating humans' will to survive.
Yeah, exactly.
Cobb or GP?
GP, it's not certain. Body. Mr. Elizondo.
His body starts pulsating from the chest, like a creature is trying to burst out.
It's kind of an effect.
It gets the dog. The rest of the crew realizes there's no more escape pods.
So the movie is picking up some momentum at this point, now that we have a monster on.
Yeah.
But I do want to mention, I think one of my biggest gripes is, and anything to do with the monster, they don't want to reveal anything about this monster until the final reel, right? The final fight.
Yeah.
And so because of that, like, a lot of these scenes are kind of confusing. Like, you just don't really get a great sense of what's going on.
They reach Girl Boss, and she says it's now 48 hours until they've rescued.
Yeah.
Which...
because they're down there with a genetic monster that can...
But she's just telling them, you know, whatever they want to hear, so... Yeah,
everybody feels like she's lying.
Yeah. Steven has a hunch that Girl Boss is lying to them. The creature rips open an air vent, and an imminent implosion coming.
Yeah, so now we have a timer set up for the rest of the film.
This is all that's left.
That's all that's left. Well, I mean, listen, it's Leviathan.
It's crazy. It seemed like a longer movie. And
well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's a lot of
like atmospheric long shots of hallways.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that early on in the film. And I mean, what do you want to talk about with another video call, right?
Yeah.
Like the movie just needed one extra plot line with the corporation trying to screw them over or something like that. Like it needed one extra thing. Like the movie is just
bare.
Yeah, it's just a flat story. They needed one original element besides it's alien and water.
Yeah.
With some of the thing. That's literally all this really is. And it doesn't really help with, you know, this script to not really have any kind of personality to it. It's just the leftover parts from other better science fiction films, sadly.
8 minutes to implosion, which is sounding off all over the mining community.
Yeah.
Steven and Justin try to fix the problem.
So yeah, they do attempt to try to save the ship or save everything.
Justin thinks he sees the dock.
And see, this is a great example of like a missed opportunity. Because how many times have we seen like somebody talk to somebody and it's revealed they're part of a monster or something like that?
Mm.
Right. I just want to mention it because like
it copies The Thing too much.
It really does. And like this reveal isn't a reveal. Like you just kind of see the doctor's face and you know it's not right. But we don't see any more of the monster. Like Ernie Hudson's reactions don't. There's no reaction. There's nothing that we see to give him that reaction. He just sees the doc's face in like a mask, but we don't really see anything else.
No,
it's a close up
at all.
So we don't know what he's like reacting scared to. And it's just such an odd editing choice for a monster movie with a monster designed by Stan Winston. And this is the part where the editing really drove me nuts in the film is you have a great opportunity to do a scare where he thinks he sees the doctor and then it's revealed that it's this giant monstrosity instead. We don't get that, even though we get Hunter Hudson's reaction to it. Yeah. It's a very strange cut. I don't know why Cosmatos didn't want to shoot the monster that way or why they didn't want to reveal it at that point. You're near the end of the film at this point. You might as well show me a little bit more of the monster. You're going to show him in daylight in 10 minutes.
The creature comes out and attacks Elizabeth. The creature attacks Steven. There's 4 minutes to implosion.
So, as we're coming out here, I do want to mention that I think Ernie Hudson's character is probably the strongest character in the movie, Justin.
Yeah.
I think he's the strongest and most likable character is in this entire thing. And it's appropriate that of the three people that are going to make it out of this boat, that he's one of them.
Yeah.
And Peter Weller and, of course, Willie. Or Elizabeth, pardon me. I'm calling her Elizabeth.
They plan to get in the suits and make a run to the surface. The creature tries to stop them, but at every turn. Steven gets an axe. He burns up the creature a little bit.
Yeah. They do perform a nice attack on him.
He escapes in a suit to the sea. Everything implodes.
To the sea. He sends the two of them off on their own while he tries to distract and make sure the monster doesn't get them.
They all head up to the surface.
He is behind them, but they all get up. And so I have to mention here, as the movie has picked up a little momentum, and it has, like things are moving, like we're getting the monster move around, there's attacks. I have some issues, but the movie is going up to almost watchable at this point. And this ending is a disaster.
Yeah.
It's a fucking disaster.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Okay, so we have one of the few shots is actually in water, which is them dropping their suits and going up. And everything with the suits coming apart is fine. It's the second they get to the top of the water, like they get up there and they're just floating around and all of a sudden, these sharks materialize as if from nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's sharks! Like,
okay. And there's a bunch of them.
Yeah, I was like, well, nobody's bleeding, so you're probably fine. So it's not that big a deal, but I mean, I guess there's sharks that could eat you. But the movie also believes it's not a big deal. Because as quickly as the sharks appear, their threat is completely forgotten.
Yeah.
Like, within 30 seconds, within 15 seconds, no one is talking about or cares about the sharks anymore. Because the Leviathan, which is not the Leviathan, appears. The giant chicken pops up in the daylight with this blue background behind him. And it looks fucking terrible.
Yeah, it looks bad. It's like an amalgamation of like, it looks like that meat that we had the other day from the store where you pulled it apart and it was like meat glue.
Yeah, the meat glue and stuff.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of that.
Yeah, it really was just a hodgepodge of ideas that just doesn't really come together. There's a reason a lot of people don't really talk about this. This movie's forgotten because the beast is forgettable and the plot is, you know, forgettable as well.
Yeah, so they're bobbing in the ocean. They shoot a flare at a helicopter. The helicopter comes
down. It's just there, so it finds them. There's no, you know, nothing, no drama or anything else.
Steven explodes the creature. They're rescued.
Okay, so by the way, Steven explodes. So we get this end moment for it. Throws the flare in his mouth. Let's get
out of here. Yeah.
And like they escape. And first of all, the one thing I want to talk about is Ernie Hudson's character is unceremoniously killed off.
Yeah.
It is a weird cut that he gets slapped in the face, right?
Yeah.
And then he's just floating under the water and nobody cares. He's one of the most important characters in the film. And almost every other death, somebody had a moment where they were like, no, not Hector Elizondo. Like they had a moment, right? And this important character just dies and it doesn't matter. It's very strange. It's poorly shot and it's not really fitting for the character at all.
Mm-mm.
Another poorly edited sequence in this barely watchable mess. And that's it. The movie comes to an end.
Steven punches girl boss.
Oh, yeah. And then we go back to the thing, and then girl boss. I like that you've been calling her that. Meg Foster's witch eyes get punched out by Peter Weller.
Yeah.
It's whatever. It's an 80s ending. You can get away with that. It's fine. Yeah, the movie's a real disaster how it comes to an end. Also, the Jerry Goldsmith score is really good. And the end, it feels like it's an adventure movie. Like, the end score really feels like a different film entirely. But, I mean, otherwise, I do really like the music in the film.
All right, so do you want to say anything else about this movie before we move on to reviews?
There's a reason a lot of people don't talk about it. It's simply not that good. It's not that original. The creature design is also not great. If you're a Peter Weller fan, I'd recommend it. If you love Ernie Hudson and you're a completionist, check this out. If you're an Ernie Hudson stan, didn't do it there. If you love Hector Elizondo and you need to see every film he's ever done and study it, God help you. But you can watch this movie.
Yeah.
But otherwise, for a sci-fi fan, there's a lot of better things to watch. I mean, the sad part is we have to watch Deep Star 6, and this film is much better than that, from what I understand. I've never seen that.
I haven't either.
Yeah, it's Sean Cunningham, so it can't be that great.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so it is what it is, so.
Well, as far as reviews are concerned, I have a treat for you.
Ooh.
Before we do that, 23% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Makes sense.
5.8 out of 10 on IMDb.
Okay, I buy that.
And I have two reviews for you.
Oh, a pair of them.
Yes, both 10 star, one better than the other. Let's start with the crazy one.
Okay, lay the crazy on me.
David Bowie rocks.
Okay.
Dude, I just saw this movie.
Dude.
I just want to say that Dude. David Bowie, and that's just without a T.
Oh, bust.
Just want to say that David Bowie rocks, and so do all his little puppet friends. Every time I watch this trippy flick, I just want to grab a bong and hit it like Cheech and Chong. Oh, dude, whatever happened to them? Dude, Labyrinth rocks. Wait, what the hell? David Bowie wasn't in this movie. Where am I?
That is my new favorite review on this show.
Had to read it. I laughed so hard when I read it.
I can just imagine like a stoner just like grabbing this film and like watching it. Yeah. Like, wait a minute, man. I don't remember Peter Weller in this. You get 20 minutes in, nothing's fucking happened. Not even weed could make this movie better.
On to the real
review. And Labyrinth is awesome, by the way. You should watch more Labyrinth.
Yeah. We'll talk about Labyrinth later.
But not Leviathan.
This review is called The Movie is Dope Sick Good.
It is dope sick good. You know what? I've changed my mind. I'm rating it 9 out of 10.
This movie, enhanced by the use of medicinal herbs, is an absolute blast. Peter Weller, it's me, Murphy, is both comically delightful and physically titillating.
I didn't think that about Peter Weller, but he is very good in this movie and very cool. You know what? He is titillating. This guy's right.
The special effects are far superior to comparable movies at the time. Alien, Deep Star 6, The Abyss. And then even compared to special effects of today's movies. I found the monster absolutely terrifying. I woke up in a cold sweat in the night after watching this movie. Ernie Hudson's Winston gets killed in the end. And unlike some previous posters, I thought it was a great addition to the movie.
No, it's stupid.
At least he made it through, unlike Sammy Jackson in Deep Blue Sea.
He's got the worst death of it. It's like, oh, wait, the black guy made it? The hell he did.
Another movie I highly recommend.
No, that movie sucks too.
All in all, it's got a great cast. Could have used more dudes from Ghostbusters.
It could have used more dudes from Ghostbusters. I won't.
IMO. Don't know what that means.
In my opinion.
Oh, okay.
In my opinion.
Great special effects. All I can say is buckle your seatbelts. Hold on to your potatoes, Dr. Jones. We go for a ride. Because this is a knock your socks, white knuckle, pedal to the metal horror thriller flick that is definitely worth a free rental from Blockbuster. I wanted to mention this review was written in 2006.
Written in 2006?
Yeah.
You could still go to a Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? This is not worth a Blockbuster rental. Nor is Deep Star 6. You should only watch The Abyss. That's the spoiler for the other episodes.
Yeah.
You should only watch The Abyss. No, those were good reviews. I'm glad you brought the craziness there of a man who confused the two films and then an individual who also, for some reason, very much liked this film.
Yeah. Got the Labyrinth mixed up.
That was pretty good. Well, with that, next week we will be talking about Sean Cunningham's Deep Star 6. And, oh, the show's not over yet now, is it? Because in the year of 1989, Roger Ebert was very much alive!
Alive.
And, of course, he reviewed Leviathan. And once again, making me feel like I was off my rocker here, he gave it a good review. Siskel did not, but I was a bit surprised. I'm always surprised when Ebert gives what I think is a shit film a really good review. And he kind of liked this movie, and I'm not 100% certain why he
did. Yeah.
Our next movie is named Leviathan, and it takes place on the floor of the Atlantic Ocean in a deep-sea mining station where the workers combine the duties of geologists and astronauts. They are nearing the end of a 90-day tour of duty when one day one of the miners wanders into an area of the ocean floor that they haven't explored yet, and he discovers there the rusting hulk of a gigantic Russian ship named Leviathan.
I need more light. Leviathan.
Six-pack, you hear that? Need more light.
More light.
Six-pack.
All right, look. I gave up.
Seriously, people really...
And when he falls off the edge, he discovers that ship, abandoned on the ocean floor. It turns out to contain a deadly life form that can attach itself to human beings, mutating them into sea monsters. Richard Crenna is the doctor in charge of analyzing this bizarre threat, and Peter Weller is the mission commander.
It has all the characteristics of deep-sea marine life. Scales, gills...
After I saw Ebert's good review, I went back and watched it a second time.
The mutant machine seemingly killed two of the crew members, but as their body bags are being prepared...
I don't know why you did that.
Into the sea,
I thought I missed something.
Glutton for punishment. Hey,
punishment for gluttons?
What are you talking about?
They're dead. Wait a minute. I feel something, too.
Let's go.
Somebody's alive in here. Come on, come on, come on.
All right, come on, let's push it, Doctor. What do you mean, push it? The human beings we're talking about.
As the mutant monster spreads its tentacles throughout the ship, panic spreads among the crew. I always love these monster on the loose scenes where it turns out that there are an enormous number of things that can go wrong, break, leak, and spout steam before the whole operation comes to a halt, just like they have a whole built-in system of pipes that can burst. From looking at those scenes, you can see that Leviathan is a combination of Alien and The Thing, crew members and scientists inexorably transformed into monsters, one at a time. And I guess the characters in Leviathan, of course, didn't see those earlier movies because they make exactly the same mistake, even though they know that this creature only attacks people when they're alone. Of course, naturally, they go off alone at exactly the wrong time. Right. They'll do it every time. Leviathan is not in the class of Alien, but it is an effective thriller, and there were some times when it got to me. I was entertained by it. The movie does a good job of creating a believable and authentic-looking undersea station, although the sea monster itself, designed by Stan Winston, is just a recycled version of creatures he's already done, and it's sort of disappointing.
I wasn't particularly captivated by the story because I had obviously seen it many times before. I ended up noticing the people. I mean, my mind got distracted, and I started to look at Amanda Pays, who is one of the assistants there. And I spent most of the movie seeing how tall she was, and she's quite short. I was surprised. Second, I saw her walking around with her shoulders like this. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like she was afraid of how beautiful she is or didn't want to be seen as
beautiful. I think Siskel had an erection the entire time.
Yeah, I think he was captivated by her.
He was giving her a thumbs up.
Pretty dead story. By throwing off wisecracks. He's a very interesting actor to watch. He's got some of the James Woods life in him. But other than that,
it
was just like I was watching two people who I really enjoy trapped in a familiar story.
I enjoy the way what Weller does is always remains extremely cool when another actor would have exploded at some of those moments. But I was not able to detach myself in the way that you did. I did get involved in the fact that they're under all this pressure. You hear the sea station creaking and moaning under the enormous weight of the water. I thought the special effects outside when they're walking down the ocean floor and where they get lost in the jungle of sea worms. I thought that was a very good scene. And I enjoyed
that was cool.
I like the sea worm sequence.
Much more memorable than Amanda Pays' shoulders.
No, that's the thing about Amanda Pays. She's quite memorable. Come, now let's recap our reactions.
Damn.
Yeah, he was all about it.
Two thumbs down for Fletch Lives, a disappointing sequel.
They didn't like that sequel either.
A walk through a very silly, meaningless movie. Two more downturned thumbs for Slaves of New York.
This movie's available on YouTube for free. Slaves in New York.
The real energy of people trying to survive and thrive in New York City. A split on Leviathan, the familiar sea monster tale. Roger got involved with the story. I noticed mostly the actors just as people. We both
were disappointed with Amanda Pays as his sexual, his object of sexual desire.
Nor fancy. And two more downturned thumbs for police.
He's a hornet for.
Today we learned that Gene Siskel was a good one. The
series continues amazing because neither one of us find it very funny.
What?
And so I like nothing.
What?
Gooner?
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
It's a person who masturbates a lot.
For Leviathan. So not a strong
week. There's terms for everything.
That's usually how languages work.
Wait till next week or go to see last week's movies.
Go to see last week's movies. And with the last word from Roger Ebert, that is the end of our show.
Mm-hmm.
Meredith, you have anything you'd like to say about Leviathan before we close out?
No, I don't recommend this movie.
You don't recommend? Neither do I. Are you excited for Deep Star 6?
No.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, Sean Cunningham.
It's going to suck.
Yeah, I'm not really looking forward to
Hopefully
it.
Hopefully it's short.
Yeah, I do hope it's short as well.
Otherwise, that's going to suck.
It will.
We can always watch it in shifts.
You should watch 10 minutes at a time.
Not that shift. Like an hour at a time.
An hour at a time. How long do you think Deep Star 6 is?
2 hours.
No, it's probably like an hour and 26 minutes.
God, I
Yeah, it was Sean Cunningham. It'll be an hour and 25 minutes, and there'll be a long shot of someone making tea for some reason. Don't forget that Friday 13th has like a moment where like the final girl makes like coffee or tea for like 5 minutes and just shows her like getting the pot and putting water in it, putting it on the stove. And I'm like, somebody kill somebody already. Anyway, we'll deal with that next week. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.